So I've been looking to find a new bag that's a versatile bag, one that I could take to the gym, but also take around town that's lightweight and high quality as well. I actually had just bought a bag that wasn't really working out for me. It's just the quality of the zippers, and you could like part of the side ripped already as I was trying to stuff some stuff into it. And fortunately, I just got hooked up with Solo New York, which is one of the biggest bag brands in the country. But really what's so fantastic is the versatility and quality of their gear. Their Varsity All-Star Backpack Duffel is the one that I picked out. It transforms into a duffel. You can hold it on the side, on top, or you can put it on your back as well. It's got a separate compartment for shoes. I actually can fit my size 13 basketball shoes in there if I'm going to go to the gym. It opens up the way like a suitcase would open up from the top, and it's also got compartments for backpack stuff. It's got a laptop bag. And I think the biggest thing that I like about it the most is just the quality. Like the zippers, they move freely and easily, and they never get caught. And they've got great pulls on them that you can tell aren't going to break. So really, if you're looking for a new bag that's versatile, I mean, it's an important product too. I mean, just having a bag that actually has compartments and you have a system and you know where everything is in it, it's actually really makes your life a lot easier. So the way to get started with them, solo-ny.com/capspace is the URL. /capspace, easy to remember. We talk about it all the time on the program. They have hundreds of designs and you can get 25% off your order. solo-ny.com/capspace. Once again, that's 25% off at solo-ny.com/capspace. Well, Danny, it seems like there's not really as much to talk about here, but there was a rather unexpected trade between Philly and Denver, and one that helps out Denver's tax concerns, creates a pretty big hole on their roster, potentially, as we figured would happen when they tried to get out of the tax. But at least Denver avoided having to give up huge assets to get out of the tax. But they also had to give up the most valuable player of the three that we thought they were going to move.
Right. So the three players we're talking about here are Wilson Chandler, who got moved in this deal, Kenneth Faried, and Darrell Arthur. I mean, Darrell Arthur, you know, relatively close to dead money. Faried, I think people still have some value, but his contract is richer than Arthur's is. But so Wilson Chandler gets traded from Denver to Philadelphia alongside a 2021 second and then a second round pick swap. So not a huge pick swap. It's a second round pick swap in 2022. And so it kind of accomplishes two different goals for the Nuggets. It gets them out of this salary burden. As you said, my numbers put them at about $8.9 million over the tax right now. That is not their tax payment. That is the amount they are over the tax. And at 8.9, first of all, that number is a lot easier to manage than where they were before, where they were in the 20s. But also getting out of $8.9 million, should they want to do that, is a lot easier. And then for Philly, the goal here was to get a player who can be a part of the rotation. And I would not expect Wilson Chandler to start for them, but he is more of a forward than either a 1-2, which was one option that had been considered, or a 2-3. You know, they could go in a lot of different ways with the perimeter, which was their biggest need. And apparently, I mean, we don't know this for sure, but it sounds like Philadelphia picked this over their remaining options on the perimeter. And when we talk about some of the other moves that happen, that makes a little bit of sense, sort of paralleling what happened with Amir Johnson, where I don't think Philly picked the door of the ones that are theoretically open that I would have chosen, but it's not so far down the list that I'm going to trash them for it.
Yeah, obviously this comes with an opportunity cost, but there is one nice thing about this move too, and that is because Chandler was taken into cap space, he can be moved again immediately, and he can also be aggregated. So that's big, because this is now matching salary that they have if they want to make a trade, not even necessarily Kawhi Leonard, but they could try to get somebody else as well during the season if, you know, things kind of aren't working out. And Chandler is a guy who Ethan Strauss wrote this piece a little bit ago that I contributed to, and that we had a little supplementary discussion of on Patreon, that I just, he had recorded it, so I was like, hey, can I post it? And he's like, sure. About how sometimes it's more about not having weaknesses than having great strengths. And Chandler at this point doesn't really have any great strengths. At one point he could be a decent scorer against mismatches. That really seemed to have waned last year. He shoots it okay from three, but isn't an enormous threat. But you can't just leave him wide open out there either. And defensively, he's not going to really like lock anybody down. But you know, you're not just quaking in your boots if he's got to guard someone on the perimeter. He's certainly a little older, in his early 30s now. But someone who definitely can help him, can definitely be in the rotation. I mean, remember, remember, this is a guy for Denver who played 48 minutes and was 0-for-3 from the field in their season closing game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And so he definitely is a player who has value in a high value game, and they don't need him to start if Robert Covington just goes super cold again, or he's getting overpowered. Maybe you could throw Chandler out there, or he could be part of the rotation. I mean, what do you think the opportunity cost was here? Like, what were some of the other options that they might have had?
Well, we don't know how into the mix they got on Tyreek Evans. He is now off the market.
Yeah, I don't think they really...
Wayne Ellington is
I don't think
there.
They really could do that with Fultz in the fold. I think they want to try to make an investment
right.
in Fultz this year.
Right. For me, the main one was Wayne Ellington. I think that Ellington as kind of a Reddick light would have been fascinating because they could have done a lot of similar stuff. And they could have played those guys together, especially against second units where teams just don't have a lot of guys that can exploit you at the three defensively. I think they could have done that. You know, maybe they could have danced around Luke Richard and Bamute, though I'm guessing the Rockets are going to have a multi-year offer. That I think that's just kind of the way this is going because there aren't that many other options left for them.
Isn't it odd that if that was going to happen, it hasn't yet?
It is odd. And I wonder a little bit about that. And yeah, I mean, Houston's taxpayer MLE is one of the more interesting questions that is still out there. And then, you know, the usual suspects in terms of the lower end threes like Ennis and Trevion Graham, like guys that can be in your rotation right there. And it's an important consideration for Philly that this is a single year contract. Like they theoretically, you know, some people brought up, oh, they could have gone after player X who is a restricted free agent. Well, no, they probably couldn't have because that has to be a multi-year offer. It has to be competitive enough that the other team is not going to match. And that takes a bunch of time. So I understand why they didn't go in that direction over. And the unrestricted market is pretty weak right now. And especially because they were able to get a backup center, not my favorite backup center again, for the minimum, it was smart to use this space to get a perimeter player. It was smart anyway, but it was good to use it for a perimeter player. And the point guard market, I understand that idea. Like, oh, they could have gotten a one who maybe could be more of a fit with the starting lineup than TJ McConnell is, just because McConnell's strength and weaknesses don't make any sense there. So getting somebody, I don't know, like Napier or Seth Curry, maybe you could make an argument with that, but I would rather have Wilson Chandler than those guys.
Yeah, especially if you have to match up against Boston. You got to guard Jason Tatum, got to guard Jalen Brown, you got to guard Gordon Hayward, I should say. So yeah, I think this is a fine move. I mean, maybe you could say I would have rather had Ellington, but he has some defensive limitations, you know, so and again, they're biggest.
And he also might be looking for something different in a location or in a contract. I mean, maybe he wants multiple years.
He is from Philly, but they also say sometimes that guys don't want to play in their hometowns. So yeah, I think this is a solid move, especially when you consider that it keeps open the possibility of a trade in the near term that maybe wouldn't have been available had they just signed someone who couldn't be traded until December 15th.
I want to do a little bit more on Denver's side, just because I think this is additional color that could be valuable here. So the biggest losers in this trade might actually be the Bulls and the Hawks, because we had talked about the idea that Denver giving up maybe a first round pick, that was what happened in the mock off season, to get out of Fareed and Arthur, because if they got out of both those guys, it looked like at that point it was going to get them out of the tax. Now with Will Barton getting the money he got, it might have been a little bit tougher. But now they're only $8.9 million over the tax line. That is not enough in terms of a sense of urgency, but also they don't have to clear as much salary. So I'm not sure Denver will be able to get out of the money should they feel the need to without giving up a strong asset, but at least lowers the urgency, kind of moves them down the list, which could be very useful. And I'm interested in kind of what the asset return, how that factors in with everything else. But it is worth noting, should Denver still want to go down that road, they could, by moving Fareed and Arthur, they would be able to, by my rough count, be able to use the full non-taxpayer MLE while staying under the tax, which would be pretty awesome for them, because then they could get a small forward, theoretically, somebody who could do that. And if they just cleared Fareed, they would be below enough to get like a $3 to $4 million small forward. And that's probably enough for one of those kind of low-end guys that I was talking about with the Sixers, like a Trevion Graham or James Ennis. So I think there's still another move for Denver to make, but now they don't have to be, they're not under the thumb of all of these other cap teams nearly as much.
Yeah, and I mean, this is now a manageable tax bill, right? It was at the, before it was, okay, there's no way they're paying this thing. And maybe Arthur or Fareed could be traded for guys who make a little bit less. You know, there are ways to pare it down. I mean, my position, you know, what we've kind of heard from them is the idea that, okay, you know, we could pay the tax for 1 year. You know, we're going to be out of it again next year. year when they hope to maybe use some cap space. They also had a roster crunch as well. They basically were at 15 guys with Michael Porter already. They still need a backup point guard that they need to bring in here as well. I mean, they basically have 1-1 and 0-3s on their roster right now. Now, Will Barton is going to start at the three. They brought him back for that purpose. I think they're just going to never stop anybody, but Will Barton is probably still better than Wilson Chandler overall. And, you know, maybe the move here too could be that rather than move on from Arthur and Fareed, they might move Mason Plumlee instead, who is overpaid probably by, you know, about $6 or $7 million per season, but he's at least someone who can play. Maybe there would be a team that would take him without getting a first round pick that they had to trade away. I mean, that's really the goal. If they can get out of this tax crunch or at least reduce it without having to give up a first round pick, and, you know, we'll see what Juan Hernan Gomez and Malik Beasley end up doing. Maybe Malik Beasley is going to play some one this year. He's more suited to guard ones, so we'll see how he looks in summer leagues. He'll be playing in his third summer league. And they also had some talk about bringing back Torrey Craig. They've got Devin Harris as well, you know, maybe, but unlikely. I think there's also talk that they might try to bring Monty Morris onto the active roster, but he actually is on a two-way again this year, so there's really no impetus for them to do that. They can hold on to Morris and then see whether give him some shots with the big club and then see if, you know, maybe he's worth it and they can bring him onto the full roster. But they so this helps them. I mean, I think this, you know, a second round pick and then another second round pick swap, that seems about right. This was a fair trade, I would say, for both sides. You agree with that?
I do. I think that it is. And do you have anything else on this, or do you move on to Philly's other move?
Yeah, they re-signed Amir Johnson for the veterans minimum, which I think is a solid deal. Good locker room vet, still a guy who during the regular season was able to play, and now they have Rashawn Holmes, they have Amir Johnson. Yeah, they're bringing guys back. It's not sexy, but as we talked about in the mock-off season, I mean, if you're going to criticize Philly for not making the most of this cap space, you know, tell me what other moves were out there that they could have done. I think they kept flexibility open. They got Reddick to come back for pretty cheap. They still have their room exception available too. We'll see. Maybe, I don't think that could get them someone like Ellington, but might still be able to get them something, or it'll put him in good position on the buyout market this year to be able to outbid some other suitors potentially.
Yeah, that's what I think it could be used for.
Yeah, especially because they again have this roster crunch, and they are Jonah Bolden got his FIBA clearance letter, so he's someone who could give them some minutes. And the roster crunch doesn't bother me that much. I mean, you can always move on from like Korkmaz or Justin Anderson or something, especially with Chandler in the fold now. Anderson is pretty redundant, and he's a free agent at the end of this year anyway, so that might be. And if I were another team, I might just, with cap space, I might again try to take a flyer on him. We've been talking about that for years and years, and it looks like he's just never going to develop, but especially with some of the injury concerns he's had. But still, you know, he's a guy with 3-and-D tools, so those guys get chances and should.
Yeah, and with Amir, I certainly understand the rationale from the Sixers perspective. A guy who was probably popular in the locker room, I've heard very good things about him over the past, and was willing to come back for the minimum, knows what his responsibilities are. I had a couple guys higher than him, Kyle O'Quinn most notably, who I secured for them in the mock-off season because I thought he was the best fit. And when it opened up the room mid-level, I thought that even made more sense because I think O'Quinn's a little bit more solid. But the margin between those two guys is not massive. And now Philly, should they, oh, heaven forbid, have the need for more at the center position, like if Embiid had a sustained injury or something like that, they could theoretically use the room mid-level to sign somebody on the buyout market or whatever. Like they would be able to make something work there if they had to. And Amir is, as a backup, is solid, and as a kind of gap filler at center. And then remember, they also have Rashawn Holmes still too.
Yeah, they do. Although Holmes struggled a little bit, and he's better offensively than Amir, but nowhere near as good defensively. And you know, we'll see. A lot of bigs still out there. Brook Lopez, looks like Dwight Howard is probably going to sign with the Wizards, so that hasn't been confirmed, but looks like it's going that direction. He hasn't technically been bought out yet. And, you know, I think there are better players than Amir Johnson out there. They might have cost more. You know, Channing Frye probably isn't, I don't know if he's better than Amir. He's not as rugged, but he provides a different element. And Kyle O'Quinn, Greg Monroe, I mean, there are guys out there who can play. But, you know, yeah, the Sixers, they didn't remake their team. They didn't get maybe as modern as they would have liked, but they're never going to play that way anyway. They're always going to play conventional pick and roll defense with Joel Embiid. And so when you got him back there, you can get away with guys like Redick on the perimeter a little bit more. So I think they did about as well as they could have. Maybe if they'd have gotten a little bit sexier backup center and another backup too. But, you know, again, it's worth noting they have an investment in TLC. They have an investment somewhat in Korkmaz. They got an investment in Fultz too. I mean, the backup shooting guard, if Fultz can come back and actually shoot a little bit, you know, you're not as worried about backup shooting guard. You could play probably that too. So I think this is fine. And they can make moves. Chandler could be traded eventually also. They've got that extra pick in the larder. So they don't have to complete their team right now. If it looks like these young guys aren't ready, you can go in the middle of the season and fill in those holes.
Yeah, and I mean, depth was an issue for this Sixers team last year. I think they're better positioned right now. It'll obviously depend on how all this works out, which of their young guys can step into anything, really. But if they can get that from any one of them, I think that would be a big help.
Let's move to LA now with the Clippers, where Zach Lowe reporting that, as we suspected, a substantial non-guarantee on Avery Bradley's two-year $25 million deal. Looks like, doing the math from his tweet, $1.5 million guaranteed in the second year. And so that's something that they could easily stretch and wouldn't impact their cap space. Clippers still in 2019. Looking at over $60 million in space right now. And with Bradley back, their team's about done. They got a ton of different options. Bradley also, the beauty of that, as we talked about, is he can be traded now because he's got that non-guarantee on the last year. And as long as he gets traded, you know, prior to the trade deadline, then the other team wouldn't have to guarantee his salary right away. If he gets traded after the trade deadline, which would be, you know, once the Clippers season ends, then the other team would have to guarantee that salary. He would just count for nothing, and it becomes very difficult because he counts as the guaranteed amount outgoing and the full amount incoming. So it becomes very difficult to do that if you don't guarantee him. But as long as you do that before the trade deadline, you can still get around that. So good job by the Clippers. Fair deal for all. I mean, I think, and as we mentioned, especially with that nine guarantee, I thought a missed opportunity. I mean, that's one where maybe you could say Philly should have tried to get Avery Bradley instead of Wilson Chandler. But you know, I'm not sure that Bradley really wanted to go there because he was with the Clippers. He's probably going to start. I don't think he would have started in Philly.
Yeah, especially once they brought Redick back. I mean, you'd be looking at kind of six man spot, and if Markelle Fultz ascended, then there would be even less of an opportunity. And Bradley is presumably, his primary goal this year is to rehabilitate his value. It's a lot easier to rehabilitate your value as a starter than as a back.
Yeah, and it will be a crowded backcourt. I mean, we still haven't heard anything about Teodosic getting waived yet, so he might still be around. They've definitely got quite a few guys there. They've got Mike Scott. We still don't know what the terms of that are yet. Not that he's in the backcourt, but that's the other move that they've made so far. But they still got Tyrone Wallace, and who is out there as a restricted free agent. Now with the Clippers probably not having the space to match, he should be very gettable with an offer sheet. I would recommend teams doing that once the moratorium ends.
And I would do the same with Montrezl Harrell if the Clippers are really, really steadfast about not going multiple years. I would feel pretty, you know, it's never a lock or anything like that, but if you had a number that you were happy with, why not take a shot at Montrezl Harrell?
Staying in LA now, they didn't have a signing, but some interesting news. One reporting indicating that the Lakers passed on DeMarcus Cousins at a similar number to the Warriors, and that Cousins may have even wanted to go there first, which if I were him, I might feel that way because you're probably at least going to get to close games at center there. But the Lakers, because they worried that he wasn't going to be ready to start the season, passed him. That seems like relatively short-sighted thinking to me for the Lakers, frankly. I mean, to get Cousins with that type of upside. Again, we don't know if he's ever going to be the same player. I think odds are that he won't. You know, the Elton Brand comparison, I thought, was an interesting one that's been thrown around. It's kind of similar body type to Cousins. Never was the same after the Achilles, although he remained an effective player for a time, but he was kind of more of a little things guy than Cousins. But yeah, I mean, I think, okay, yeah, he's not ready until December. Fine, you know, just find some other center. You could do that, figure out a way to play around him. Maybe they're worried from a chemistry standpoint, but you know, they've made some signings that would indicate that is not really a huge concern for them. And then another interesting report coming from Woj that Lonzo and his camp leaked the thought that they might need surgery. And now they're saying, oh no, he, I guess, has a torn meniscus, but maybe he won't need surgery necessarily. And that the reason that that was leaked was because they wanted to keep him in LA so he doesn't get traded. If he wants to do that, do whatever you can to be where you want to be. I have no problems with that at all. Like, if you're going to try and like convince me that he's some kind of cancer because he wanted to not be treated. He wanted to stay there. He wanted to not be traded. You know, it's like you, if it's at the point where they're trying to trade you, like being a team player kind of goes out the window at that point. So I think we'll see what happens here. I mean, if he doesn't need surgery, that's certainly a good thing. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing to come out of this, is that maybe he won't need surgery and maybe he'd be ready to start the season, and he'll still be able to have more of a summer. But a very weird situation here.
Yeah, and as long, I will add an additional caveat that as long as the injury is legitimate, like, I don't like guys inventing an injury so they don't get traded or something like that.
Dude,
but if in this case,
I would do that. I would do, like, Kyrie invented an injury. Well, I guess he didn't invent it because he eventually needed the surgery. But, like, dude, if they're trying to trade you, do
that. I would do like to say that, hey, I have an elective surgery I can do. I think putting out a straight up false report, that's the thing that would bother me. This isn't false though. This is just, it's embellished.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but
and
not
it's
even
not,
necessarily
it's not clear. Like, people are. I mean, did I read it wrong? Like, the initial report said he's going to have surgery, right? Like, I'm not making that up, am I?
Well, I think what happened, because Woj put out a correction, I think he misstated it.
I'm talking about
like
5-6 days ago when we first talked
about it. Oh, that. All I remember is torn meniscus. I don't remember the surgery requirement. I can't speak to it either way.
Yeah, I thought I read that. Maybe I'm just misremembering it. And if so, I apologize. But yeah, so we'll see whether he ends up having surgery. That's going to be an interesting one. Where do you want to go next here?
Let's go to Indiana. The Pacers basically used up the remainder of their cap space on Tyreke Evans. 1-year deal, $12 million, and totally a reasonable player to add in. Another guy who can have the ball in his hands. Distinct chance that he will close some games. I mean, they have a lot of different options there in the perimeter rotation now, with Oladipo, Collison, Joseph, Bogdanovich, Tyreke. I mean, theoretically, I guess Doug McDermott, and I feel like I'm forgetting somebody. But anyway, they're loaded there, and so they could kind of go with whoever's playing well, and especially if they want to go to some lineups where Oladipo is kind of the lead guard and they don't play either Joseph or Collison, then having Tyreke there is another interesting piece, especially if some of the shooting that he brought while he was in Memphis is confirmed over the course of another season or portion of it.
Yeah, that's the question. I think the 1-year deal, while certainly it might have been nice for Indiana to get him on a longer term deal, because it's one thing to remember about all this, right? It's like, there's this market, and I think we all realize that this is an aberration in terms of being team friendly. But once we get to next year, it's going to go back to the same as it's kind of been these last few years, where, you know, $15 million a year, that's like a solid starter, you know? And so Tyreke Evans has played at that level, at least he did last year. Now, with his health, there's a concern. Sometimes he's not as motivated, but so you've got at least, you know, he's going to be motivated again to play well. And perhaps he just simply wasn't interested in signing on for longer. You know, I think the players acknowledge that this is a really bad market for players and want to get back out there too. But Evans has an injury history. Maybe that's behind him now that he's not playing in New Orleans anymore. So it would have been nice maybe if they could have, I mean, even signed him to 2 years at $12 million a year. You know, maybe he would have been willing to do that, or get the team option, partial guarantee on the next year or something like that. But I think he will really help them. They needed one more guy who can really create, especially if he can shoot the ball. I know that you mentioned that. Sadly, I don't think they are ever going to play Oladipo at the one and Evans at the two. I think Evans' defense is going to be a very interesting one. You know, he's never really been lauded on that end. But, you know, I think clearly last year he was a much better player than Collison, a better player than Joseph. If they're playing him at the three, better player than Bogdanovich. I don't know that he's much worse defensively than Bogdanovich is either. So I think you could really get a lot out of him, and he was the best free agent remaining in the market. It was just a very interesting, it seemed like it was faded cloud completely. He was going to end up there. You're just thinking like, all right, the negotiations have got to be interesting to where, is it a 1-year deal? Do they want him for longer? Does he not want to go for longer? But they're the only ones who had money, and he was the only real logical fit to go there at this point. So it seemed like it was going to happen basically from the moment Will Barton re-signed in Denver.
At this point, after signing Tyreke, the Pacers have about $4.3 million, assuming they keep Collison, which they will, and Anabogu, and then stretch Al Jefferson. If these numbers hold, I would actually probably not stretch Al Jefferson, just take the medicine this year, because they still have the room mid-level. So I don't think they're going to get two $4 million guys, especially with their roster being pretty well spoken for at this juncture. So that's what I would do. They have to decide that by a day after Jefferson clears waivers. So I would probably go in that direction now that they don't need that money to sign Tyreke or whoever else. And the other part that we should talk about here just briefly is Memphis keeping Tyreke Evans at the trade deadline, despite the fact that because non-bird rights were never going to be enough to keep him. So they were going to have to dip into the mid-level. Presumably they made him an offer of some variety, maybe multiple years, and it would certainly have a lower salary for the 18-19 season than what he got in Indiana, because the value of that is lower. And that is, you know, something we kind of expected. When they didn't hold on to it, they could have gotten some assets. Maybe they couldn't have gotten the assets they wanted, but holding firm, going through all that, I mean, it's not as kind of embarrassing as what happened to Atlanta, who held firm on Bellinelli and then just cut him and he went to the Sixers for the minimum, but it's not really that different.
Yeah, well, and Evans, we know that there were offers. I don't know that anyone was really even willing to give up much of anything for Bellinelli or Ilyasova. I mean, there are guys who really just aren't tradable and for any kind of significant value and just end up getting bought out for that reason. But Evans was not in that category. Now, we still don't know exactly what was out there. A first round pick probably wasn't. But then another thing that you can look at here is they could have certainly gotten a first round pick if they'd been able to take back some money probably for Evans, right? And they just weren't willing to do that. And so it was the stubbornness of not being willing to try. Yeah, you know what? You probably could only gotten some second rounders. And if it was Boston, you know, those would have been crappy second rounders. Philly, I think, wanted him to. And so two second rounders wasn't enough. Philly, I'm sure, would have been willing to part with a couple of their seconds that they parted with. They had 6 seconds or whatever it was, or 4 seconds, I'm sorry, in this year's draft initially. But anyway, that didn't work out too well. But hey, you know, at least they avoided taking on money for 2018-19 to preserve all this awesome flexibility and free agency that they have really capitalized on this year. We'll see. Maybe they could get someone still.
Yeah, they could get somebody still, but they have the room mid-level and they could do basically the
Memphis?
Same stuff that they could have.
No. The full mid-level, right?
Sorry. The non-taxpayer. Yeah. Had it right in my head, had it wrong in my mouth. So from there, I think the place to go is Utah. I mean,
yeah.
So we still, I have an instinct here that we're going to see something on this third year, but Dante Exum gets 3 years, $33 million from the Jazz. That is, you know, solid backup money, but for multiple years. And that also at the present time puts Utah makes it a little bit harder. They can't keep both their non-guaranteed guys, which are Ekpe Udo and Drebko, and use the non-taxpayer MLE and stay under the tax. So we'll see what choice they make there. But the more important part thing here is Dante Exum. And Exum, when he's been healthy, I still think there's a lot there. Fast as hell, intriguing defensively, not great at, you know, creating a ton for other people, but Utah's offense does more of the heavy lifting there than almost every other offense in the league, and they gambled a little bit on his upside, and theoretically Exum staying healthier.
Yeah, and this is one of those ones where maybe the organization, as you mentioned, it does seem based on the market that some sort of a non-guarantee could be coming here on the end of this, but we'll see. And Exum, blinding speed, just the jump shot hasn't come around, obviously, but he had the shoulder injury last year. He's got to get a lot better as a shooter. I think he has some raw passing vision, especially when he's trying to gnash along the baseline or hit the roll man. He's got a nice chemistry with Gobert. Turns it over way too much. Just has not played enough basketball. You know, really his brain probably needs more work just in terms of reps. And this is definitely an overpay for what Exum was last year. And it is going to bite into their 2019 space to the tune of about $11 million. So now they're at $38 million or so. But this is a team that has so many young players who are in the mix already. You probably only really need to sign one big free agent, and free agents that don't necessarily go to Utah, you could see them re-signing guys as well. You could even see them holding on to Favors, in which case they would be down to about $20 million in space next summer. So I was expecting this to be lower, but as still somewhat of an Exum believer, I think it was fine. He's got defensive upside and obviously that great speed. So this could end up working out. And remember again, right, this is an overpay in this market, but you know, this is the same contract that like Terrence Ross got, you know, and I'm a bigger believer in what Dante Exum could be than I was of like what Terrence Ross could be when he signed his extension. So I think in that context, it's fine. A lot of these extensions, especially for someone who's as young as Exum, he's 18 when he was drafted, are risks. And now this extension continues that risk, but it's not just going to be an absolute killer for a Utah team that generally manages its finances very well.
Right. And Exum can be a part of their rotation, even if he ends up not being the perfect starter next to Donovan Mitchell. They're not paying him like a starter, so that works out reasonably well. The other piece of Utah news, they re-signed Howell Neto, who was their third string point guard when the first two are healthy. 2 years 4 years, $4.4 million. They have sufficient bird rights for that, so nothing big there. I'm fine with this. Again, I wonder about if that second year is guaranteed. Just was there really a need to give him there? It's pretty much at replacement level for me, and I like teams having three point guards, and I like Neto as a third point guard, yeah. But that could very well be resolved by this.
Neto, a favorite of the on-off stats, doesn't shoot many threes, but does shoot them accurately when he does. Actually, a pretty decent defensive player when he's not being overwhelmed size-wise. He was certainly... wasn't able to really contribute when he was forced to play with Rubio out against the Rockets. But yeah, for the regular season, and then as a backup point guard, kind of a backstop too, where hey, if Ricky Rubio leaves and they want to bring Exum in as the starter next offseason, I mean, because that's part of the thing thinking with Exum too is, hey, you know what, if he grows, then he could just be our starting point guard and we could move on from Rubio and we've got a starting point guard for $11 million. And so just to have, I think there's a big value in, okay, we've got a guy for the minimum who's been part of our system, he's 26, who we trust to do a reasonable job. And yeah, you know what, he's not amazing, but hey, if we just get Ace out, we would have to overpay to get a more established backup next summer, or Dante Exum gets hurt again, we at least have a guy who's going to get out there and not kill us during the regular season. And to pay $2 million a year for that, yeah, I'm totally fine with that contract.
Let's jump to Phoenix. So this is news that I think has more significance down the line than immediately for logical reasons. So Devin Booker is reported by Woj. Devin Booker and the Suns are progressing towards finalizing a max contract extension.
Wait, hold on. I thought he was pissed off because of Tyler Ulis, and he wasn't just going to turn down $158 million.
Mm-hmm. Devin Booker is a smart man. And so why this is significant for two reasons. One, it's committing to a young player who scores a lot of points. We have both expressed our misgivings with certain parts of his overall game. So that is one significant. I mean, you could think about Andrew Wiggins or numerous other ones, of the idea of committing to a young player who is, as all young players are, an unfinished product ahead of the time that you have to. The second part of this is, in Booker's specific circumstances, has greater significance because he was far enough down in the draft that it was a low cap hold, because it was only going to be about $10 million. And when you sign a player to an extension, that first year salary, that 19-20 in this case salary, replaces the cap hold. And so that takes away about $15 million in cap space for Phoenix the second it is signed. And Phoenix, you know, it kind of seemed to me like one of the things that they had been doing was lining themselves up for being a team to use cap in 1920. That's when Tyson Chandler and Jared Dudley, among others, expire. And they could still technically do that if they signed Devin Booker to this extension. But the math does get a lot harder. And that's why one of my ideas with this would be, and this is just a consideration, it depends on what assets you can get in return, would be to move one or both of Chandler or Dudley for somebody who is already getting paid for that next year and getting an asset in return. There are a lot of teams that don't like the guys they have, but the big question there is, what can you get as an asset? It's entirely possible that those teams go, well, yeah, that's something we'd like, but there isn't enough there for us to give you something worthwhile.
Yeah, if they're going to be down now to about $20 million in space next summer, and we see some of the teams that are out there, and it depends, of course, if they can make a step forward, and we'll see how some of these new young guys that they got in look. I mean, if Ayton looks awesome and Booker takes a step forward to being a superstar, I mean, we certainly have some reservations about Booker. You know, this is not, to me, other than the $15 million, I'm not like incredibly enamored of just throwing this at Booker. Now, maybe he provided some concessions, right? No player option. I don't see him making an All-NBA team this year, but you know, maybe there's no designated player element to it there. Well, there is if it's going to be 5 years, but there's no element to it of he could get more than the 25% max. So maybe there'll be some concessions here, but I don't think so. You know, usually when these bad teams have a guy like Booker, they're just like, oh, we got it. We got to just, you know, throw the five-year offer him because he might want to leave us. You know, so there's an insecurity there, and they've always got the maximum qualifying offer that they could give him next summer, although doing that would nuke their cap space in the same manner as what I'm talking about. And there's a concern, oh, maybe you could sign a 2+1 elsewhere or something.
That gets into something that I've always had frustration. I wrote back in the Real GM about how I was critical of the Kings maxing out DeMarcus Cousins, because for me, if it's not just a sure thing, the biggest risk that you're taking, it would take 2 years of sacrifice or 2 years of risk for them to get out. So you'd have the risk of not signing an extension, which, you know, you could argue about who's taking that. And then in order for them to get all the way out, you would have to be, they'd have to take their qualifying offer. And for Devin Booker, just like for Clint Capella or any number of these guys, that is a gigantic financial sacrifice for them. And then, as you said, max qualifying offer is there if you need it. You also have the rights. And so I'm not at the point now where going, oh, if Devin Booker signs a 2+1, or more accurately, I think it would be a 3+1, that's going to be devastating to our franchise. The difference between a 3+1 and a 5, it's there. And I mean, you know, there are times when that has ended up being incredibly consequential. Gordon Hayward, I would have felt exactly the same way. I would have made exactly the same argument I just made, and that would have been wrong. You know, like it would have been right for Utah to do that. But it's just generally the risk proposition for me, and that's that's the way I go on that.
Well, and that was at a time too in the summer of 2013, summer of 2014, where we knew the cap was going up exponentially, and so that there was that added component that there isn't here. And you know, Booker is not a max player right now. I know that's going to rub many in Phoenix the wrong way, but when you consider his defense, all of the on-off numbers, now he can certainly get there, and he deserves to be lauded for some of the strides that he made, particularly in terms of efficiency last year. But I'm not convinced that this guy is like a no-brainer max guy. I'd feel a lot better about just straight up, okay, we're going to offer you the max next summer when he's shown that he can take more steps forward this year, and you see how the fit is with all the rest of these guys. But, and you know, a lot of people were like, oh, Andrew Wiggins, you know, now Booker has been better than Wiggins was before this, but Wiggins was scoring 20 a game and middling efficiency, and all of a sudden that contract giving him that no-brainer five-year max looks pretty bad right now, right? So that additional year of information, the fact that you still of course have the restricted rights anyway, that you get the extra $15 million in cap space, or if you're really that worried, if he just totally blows up, you could just give him the maximum qualifying offer if you need to, which would mean that any deal would need to be at least 3 years that he were to sign elsewhere. So, and of course, there are nebulous aspects of, hey, this has been a downtrodden franchise, and you want to show this guy right away that you believe in him. Well, you know, the Cavs did that with Kyrie Irving, too, at the moment when he became available, and he still wanted out. So I don't know that you're really forced to, the idea of, oh, he's going to get mad. Yeah, okay, but if you come with the money next year and you explain it as, hey, we're trying to use this extra $15 million in space, that seems to me, seems to be good enough, unless you're getting a significant concession for this year, and we'll see whether they did or not, if in fact this gets finalized this week.
We can go to the minimum contract section of this program, and I think we should start with Kevon Looney. This is the most intellectually interesting to me. So Kevon Looney signed a 1 year minimum with the Warriors, and that is significant because since they declined the fourth year team option on him last year, they could have only paid him up to $2.2 million, and they got him at even less than that. And there is a slight, you know, discount beyond that, just because not even that whole thing is part of it subsidized. But Looney comes back. He might end up being the opening day starter if DeMarcus Cousins isn't ready. I think that's kind of where I imagine Steve Kerr's headed is at for the moment. And, you know, an important part of their center rotation for the coming season.
Yeah, and to get someone for the minimum who you're okay starting, who didn't kill you, maybe you can make some strides offensively with the jump shot a little bit. And they will have full bird rights on him next summer. Are they going to use that to give some big contract to Kevon Looney? That seems exceedingly unlikely. And again, just to explain what you were talking about here, the 3 year minimum that he's getting is 1.57 million, but any 1 year deal at the veterans minimum only costs against the cap and the tax 1.51 million, which is the second year minimum. And so that's why they actually get a little bit of tax savings even off of that. So to get him back for this number when, you know, you're basically at like $4.25 per dollar to save $5 million essentially because they got him at this rather than, I guess it wasn't quite that much, but $3 million just because he's making $600,000 less. That's a nice win for them. Houston continues their amazing offseason. Michael Carter-Williams for 1 year at the minimum.
If Michael Carter-Williams could shoot at all, he would be a fascinating fit there because defensively, I like a lot of what Michael Carter-Williams can do. He can defend multiple positions. He can get steals. I remember going back to when he was the rookie of the year with the Sixers. I mean, he did elements that were very positive. The problem is he can't shoot, so you don't have to defend him. KP had in his, it's so ridiculous how he does those kind of roundups quickly. But he, I mean, so basically he's been putrid. I think it was like 26% of his shots outside of 10 feet the last 2 years.
Well, I mean, we were just talking about him as like, he was just shooting overall like 32% from the field like last year. It was unbelievable how much he was killing that team. And then he had surgery. I don't even remember anymore. This is, I know he missed the end of the season, and I can't remember whether it was his shoulder or hip, both of which he's been plagued by.
Are you emotionally prepared for his true shooting percentage of the last 2 years?
I mean, I'm very emotionally prepared. I've been tracking it.
And remember, this is true shooting. This is not field goal percentage. So he gets a benefit. Well, I mean, theoretically, he would get a benefit here from the free throw line and from three. 44.6 true shooting this year, 43.7 as a Chicago Bull in 16-17.
That's bad.
That's real bad.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, like, for Houston, if he's going to be in the rotation as the backup point guard, I mean, they're bringing him in as a third point guard, but I still think they might have been able to do even better than that just because, like, he just can't even play. Like, it's really, maybe they can rehabilitate him. He's got some talent, but he's had all these injury concerns, too. So, there's just no way he's going to be, like, some adequate three-point shooter. I mean, they've rehabbed a few guys, but I'm highly skeptical of that. And he's not like a Sean Livingston where he's got the bounce to really finish inside from the dunker roll or anything like that either.
Yeah, and it sounds like, I mean, it is at the minimum, but that's still a roster spot on a team that, remember last year, there were only, depending on the game, seven or eight guys, sometimes even six, that D'Antoni really trusted to play in games. And so if that's the threshold for me, if you can't make it to there, to that level, to play against the Warriors or the Lakers if they get there, or whoever else that those teams are, and you don't have the ceiling to eventually become a player who can be that good, then I wouldn't really be throwing money at those guys at this point with the Rockets until maybe a little later in the process when you know you have to get somebody else. And then the last of the players in this is Raymond Felton. Felton returns to the Oklahoma City Thunder for 1 year at the minimum. I think this is a really good signing for the Thunder when you give the constraints of you're getting a point guard for the minimum. I mean, some people are like, oh, you know, he did do a good job. He doesn't do a good job defending like Steph Curry or some of these other guys. Congratulations, you're getting a point guard for the minimum. That's not going to be the case. He is a capable steward. He got basically all of the minutes at point guard that Russell Westbrook didn't play that were anything other than garbage time. He did a pretty good job in those minutes. And at some point, he might fall apart. You know, he's getting older. I think he's 34 at this juncture. But, I mean, they weren't going to do better, realistically, than him for the minimum.
Yeah, I had him, you know, pretty much mid-tier among my backup point guard rankings. And so to get that for the minimum. And they actually developed a nice chemistry in lineups where Felton was the point guard. And they had all three of the big three, laughable as it is to use that term when Carmelo Anthony is involved in it. But all three of those guys off the floor, they actually had some pretty good plus minus numbers with those units and Felton. So yeah, I mean, it's really no reason to dislike that signing in the slightest. And I think we can wrap it up here. Anything else we got to talk about?
Well, I'll promote that I wrote a piece for what was billed as KD Day at The Athletic, which was the second anniversary of Kevin Durant signing. I was actually part of two pieces. One was the chronology of events that led to it. So that's not only like the Warriors getting guys at discounts, but also the mess up of the extension rules in the 2011 CBA, all that kind of stuff. So if you want to kind of get the full picture of how that all happened, you can do that there. And then another one that Marcus Thompson put together, which I thought was really cool, was not only from writers, but also from just fans and people who are connected with the team of how that morning went. I thought that was an interesting, the kind of more on the human side of it that I really did enjoy. And I would suspect
I like
that
the human touch.
I suspect that by the time this, by the time our next Dunked On comes out, I will have released Real Jam Radio. I am hopefully recording it on Tuesday because heading to Vegas on Friday and hope to have that ready by the time I leave.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for listening again, and probably we'll be back Sunday night, I'm guessing, unless anything huge happens. So have a happy 4th of July, and we will talk to you all then.